Good morning. This is Christina Malasoff, joined by my co-host Doug McGivney, guest co-host, citizen of Kinderhook, and wears many other hats. We will be joined this morning by Stephen Zarlinga. Doug will tell you more about that in a minute. Stephen will be joining us shortly by phone, and we will be talking about the economy. So if you're concerned about what's happening with the economy and you want to know more about it, stay tuned for our program. I met Doug McGivney at a rally in front of the Bank of America. He was at a he was one of the 99%.
That's right. Thank you.
Stay tuned. Beautiful morning in Hudson. Doug, tell us about our guest this morning.
Okay, his name is Stephen Zarlinga, and it's fascinating because I obtained an interest in what caused the economic meltdown and did a lot of reading on the so-called Great Recession, and it led to a book entitled The Lost Science of Money by Stephen Zarlinga. And surprisingly enough, I learned in looking in the internet that Stephen Zarlinga is from Volusia, New York. And he is an internationally known and sought figure, and his expertise is money. His book is an 800-page treatise on the history of money, his theory being that we shouldn't repeat the mistakes of the past, and he is having a great deal of success. Both Ron Paul and Senator Sanders sponsored a bill in order to inquire into the doings of the Federal Reserve, and he has addressed the Treasury and, of course, is continually active and sought out as a speaker. I am very proud that WGXC can have him to discuss both his interest in monetary matters and also, maybe to address a little bit, our favorite local president, Martin Van Buren, because he was a very big figure in the, I guess it would be the third Bank of America. So without further ado, hopefully we have a connection with Stephen Zarlinga. Stephen, welcome aboard.
Hold on. Can you hear us, Stephen?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Doug. Is this line okay? I do hear a clicking on it.
The line is okay, Stephen. This is Christina Malasoff. The only thing I will ask...
Hi, Christina.
Hi, nice to meet you. Is that you talk directly into your phone,
okay.
Because our phone line, it tends to be a little bit lower.
Okay.
And I just wanted to immediately ask about what the American Monetary Institute is.
Sure. The American Monetary Institute, abbreviated AMI, it's a think tank which... since 1996, has focused on the question of money. What kind of money system do we have? What kind of trouble has it been causing? And how do we fix it? It focuses on monetary history, theory, and reform. And people can see it, all about it, at our website, which is monetary.org. And there's a full description there, and I would encourage anybody in the area to go and take a look. We were organized there in Kinderhook in 1996 and are still headquartered there. And although I do spend quite a bit of time in Chicago, and we hold a conference every year here, Monetary Reform Conference, we'll have our 8th annual this year. We hold it at University Center and bring in really expert speakers from around the world. When I say expert, I don't mean the kind of experts that are usually brought to you through the general media. Those people are often not experts, but really apologists for a broken system.
Stephen, you are the director of the American Monetary Institute, and
yeah.
I just actually want to ask you before we proceed, if you could, if there's any way you can raise your voice or get closer to the phone.
Well, I'm right on top of the phone.
That's actually that's much better.
Oh, that's better?
Yeah, that's better right there.
All right.
Okay, so we might be reminding you from time to time to speak that
please,
close to the phone.
Yeah, do remind me because if I get carried away in the conversation, I might move the phone.
Okay, let me tell people that you just gave the URL for your website, and you can just search American Currency, and it'll come up. But I talk about this 800-page book, which I find fascinating. I'm now three-quarters of the way through. But I noticed that your speech, which, and people should know, that you addressed the U.S. Treasury some while ago, and I noticed that it is a pretty good summary of the book. I think I could have saved a few hours reading, but I wouldn't have the depth. So anyway, what would you have to say to us about what's happening in the country and our monetary currency coinage situation?
Well, this is something that you should understand, can be that everybody can understand. When you talk about currency and money, people might think, well, I'm not going to understand that stuff. But in fact, this is all about justice, about fairness. And what has happened, Doug, is that the existing power structure, which is exercised largely through banking, has brought the whole world down. The economies of the world have been brought down, and it required only government rescue saved the situation. And this is not unusual. That's been the case throughout history. Now, let me explain what my book does. There are 24 chapters. The first 23 chapters give the history, starting with Aristotle, who created the science of money. And he did that with words. And essentially, he told us, money exists not by nature, but by law. So it's something that we create with our laws. And that summarizes the science of money right there. And societies discover it, and they grow, they get corrupted, and they fall. This over hundreds of years. And it gets rediscovered again by a new society, and it grows and then gets corrupted, falls, and so on. And so we call the book The Lost Science of Money, because right now it is just once again reemerging. And once the nature of money is better understood, then societies can learn to control their own money instead of allowing, in our case, bankers to control the money system. They have there's nothing in their training or experience that gives them the moral stature to do that. And so what they've done, they've controlled it for their own purposes and really grabbed huge amounts of money from the society. Everything that they've taken, they did not create the goods and services that money can buy. That was created by our society. Through control of the money system, they're able to take it without caution, as we saw in the crisis that has brought down the whole world. Now, you have to realize that this is a battle that continues through history. This is nothing new. Those things are covered in the first 23 chapters of my book. Then chapter 24 says, all right, we look at history, we see what we learn. What do we have to do now? What do we have to do to fix the system? And that's what chapter 24 does. It provides what historical experience and thought shows to be the way out of this problem. And essentially, it's always has been through the government control of the money system, which means the people's control of the system through their legal representatives.
Okay, let me ask you to expand on that just a little bit. And I'm going to do it this way. I'm looking at a dollar bill, and it says Federal Reserve Note. Now, I know most people think that the government, U.S. government, the Treasury Department, prints these bills, it probably prints them, but creates it. Now, we know it doesn't. The Federal Reserve does. As a matter of fact, Bloomberg just had an article yesterday, and it was following up on the study that was urged by both Ron Paul and Senator Sanders, both Republican and Democrat, to audit the Federal Reserve. And they discovered that during this meltdown period, they actually pumped this Federal Reserve notes to the tune of $16 billion, much of it, more than the amount that we paid in TARP to foreign banks and foreign corporations.
Yep.
So I think to explain to people the difference between the country generating its money, say, for a purpose, infrastructure, and what the Federal Reserve has been doing with the creation of money needs a little bit of elaboration, perhaps.
Well, all right, Doug. One thing to keep in mind, if you go into all the tiny details, and by the way, it wasn't $16 billion, they're claiming $16
trillion. Trillion, right.
Studies have shown $7.7 trillion. Bloomberg wanted to find this out, Bloomberg News. And so they asked the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve refused to tell them. And so Bloomberg took them to court and lost, and they appealed it. They had to appeal it to the Supreme Court to find out what this thing, what this Federal Reserve actually did. And that's how they got the $7.7 trillion figure. Now, the important thing to understand there is not that you have to know every detail of how this thing, I almost swear when I say how this thing, I almost say this damn thing. I shouldn't do that. This is public radio. It's not that it's so important to understand how this thing actually functions. Because there's only a few bankers that really understand that. Even the economists who think they do don't really understand how that works. What you have to understand is that what we call the money power, and Martin Van Buren, by the way, since he's a local guy there, Martin Van Buren, whenever he wrote the money power, that was a phrase that he used a lot. So this thing goes all the way back there. When he wrote it out, he capitalized all the letters. Money power was always in capital letters for Van Buren.
So I noticed that in your book.
Then
you follow the trend.
Yeah. Now, anyone who is in the area there should have visited his home. His whole career was fighting the banking system of the day. And he's responsible for a lot of important things, including in New York, ending debtors' prisons, for example, and other things. He and Jackson brought down the Second Bank of the United States, and he's someone who you can look up to. He was a good guy, and it's nice to have him there in the area. But again, it's not that you have to understand each little detail, because nobody does, and that's sort of a defense of the present system that practically nobody understands it.
This is Christina.
Christina.
And what what I'd like you to do, I read your paper, it's a short paper that I think anybody would get a lot of information from, how the economists facilitated the crisis must now be held accountable.
Yeah.
The point I want to come to, and I want to make this clear, or if you can clarify this for me, is this: you're saying that a lot of people don't know that the Federal Reserve is an entity that works out externally from the government, and you're talking about something that a lot of folks from the right or libertarians say is that we have too much government. So I want you to really be clear for the audience about what is government's role in controlling the supply of money and also controlling the banks. And then also I want you to talk about the question of how wealth is generated. Real wealth versus...
We might have to do more than one show.
That's okay, but I mean, if we can just briefly hit on these points. I mean, I think these are...
The first point...
Not difficult concepts in a way.
Let's make it clear to people. Everyone thinks that the government is creating our money, and that is not the case. Our money supply should be created by the government. History shows that when the government is in charge of this, you get far better results than when you put private persons in charge of it who tend to run it for their own benefit, as you would normally expect. You know, they might not even know that they're cheating. They might just think, well, that's the way it should be, whatever. But the Federal Reserve System is an ambiguous organization. It's not a part of our government. People have to understand this. So the money that we use is provided by our banking system. And they do that in a way that, first of all, when any money comes into circulation, it comes into circulation as a loan from the banks. And what that means is that there is an interest fee on our money supply. Now, interest is something that can be charged when real loans are made, but in the case of a money supply, there should be no interest on a money supply because the money is created out of thin air. It's not backed by gold, as the Ron Paul people understand. It's simply created when a bank makes a loan. That puts new money. What we use, it's not really money, it's credit. But that puts what we use for money, into circulation, and an interest is charged on that. Now, in the case of the government, we're paying right now about $400 to $500 billion a year in interest charges on our various debt.
In interest alone. That's pretty amazing. So people should hear that and sit with it for a minute.
$400 billion is a lot of money, and it's totally unnecessary to be paid because while it's not a wrong thing for money to be created out of thin air, that's the nature of money. As Aristotle told us, money is a fiat of the law. So that's not the problem. The problem is the private creation of fiat money. Then it's a tax. Then it's just like a tax on all of us. And it's unnecessary. Our government has created money in the past very successfully. For example, the continental currency. This was created by our government, and it's the continental currency that gave us a country. They authorized the Continental Congress at the time of the Revolution. They authorized $200 million in continental currency. They created $200 million in continental currency plus replacement notes. And it financed the Revolution for 5.5 years, up to 6 months to victory. It took us to within 6 months of final victory. Now, the economists will tell you, I'm sorry, I have a great disdain for most economists.
We get that in your
book, too. You're right.
But they will tell you, they've been mistrained, folks. They will tell you, well, the continental currency became worthless. They won't tell you that the British, counterfeited billions and billions of them, while our government only created the 200 million that were authorized. Now, and that's also the case in other great inflations, but the continental currency gave us a country. We wouldn't have an America without it. If the ideas, and I wish Ron Paul would understand this, because he's a really good guy, and one of the most honest congressmen you'll find, you know. If we followed the ideas of Adam Smith, father of economics, and the Austrian School of Economics, who Congressman Paul seems to like, if we followed their ideas, we'd never have an America. We'd never come into existence. And if you follow their ideas now, we'll go out of existence, because that's where those things lead. There is an aspect of society which requires government. It's an expression of all of us, and the fact that we have problems with our voting systems, and there's so much disinformation out there through a really unfortunate media situation, that is not looking out for the interest of the nation, but has been, there are particular interests that are controlling it, and there's a term that I would like people to change. There's a term, they call it special interest.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're not special interests. They're corrupt interests.
Right.
And we need, wherever we are used to using the term special interest, we have to shift that to corrupt interests, and our language will become much plainer and will make more sense.
Stephen, I just want to interrupt just to follow through on this, because...
Anytime.
I'm sorry, but what I want to get to is then... My next question was, I thought, okay, so we nationalized the banks, although a lot of world leaders who have mentioned talked about nationalizing their banks in their countries have been assassinated. But you do not believe in nationalizing banks. You talked about something like the Chicago Plan, which I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
And can you give us an understanding of how would the government run our economic system without nationalizing the banks? The difference is? Thanks.
We don't think the government nationalizing the banks would help anything. I think it would make things worse. It's not the banking business that the government should be in. We don't want to get the government into the banking business. That's silly. We want to get the banks out of the government business of creating money.
That's right.
That's the thing.
So are you recommending ending the Federal Reserve?
Well, I'll get to what we're proposing.
Oh, okay.
It's actually in the Congress as a potential, as a bill, which can be made into law. It's called H.R. 2990, and it was introduced by Congressman Kucinich and supported by Congressman Conyers of Detroit, Kucinich's of Ohio. And it fixes the problem. It contains everything that experience and study shows we need to fix the problem. And they're both very, very strong congressmen and courageous congressmen, and that can now be supported locally. Your congressman locally, Gibson?
That's right.
He can support that in the Congress, and it makes a difference. And so people there who are hearing this, if they like what they hear, they can ask the congressman to support H.R. 2990. Now, should I tell you what it does?
Yes, but let me just mention, and you mentioned Ron Paul, who I believe supports what you're saying so far as the government creating money, which most people think it does, by the way.
Yes.
So it's just making the reality of what people think is happening.
Exactly.
And I think Ron Paul, and not only Ron Paul, but Senator... I keep forgetting his name, from Vermont.
Senator Sanders.
Bernie Sanders,
And both want to rein in the Fed, probably by putting it under the control of the Treasury Department.
Yep.
But you're right. We as a nation would not get in the banking business, and both of them agree to that. I was reading both their websites last night that are both very, it's kind of funny because they're at extreme ends of the political spectrum, but on this, they seem to be in tandem.
This issue can unite the left and the right.
And I think it's a matter of what you're doing, actually, in informing people.
Yep.
But you mentioned the corruptness. One of the things, and it is a tremendous thing to overcome, but one of the interesting historical facts of your book is Daniel Webster's fighting Jackson and Van Buren. And he was actually on a $37,000 a year retainer. And the minute they were late, he sent a letter, as you pointed out, saying, hey, where's my money? And now, in spite of that, Van Buren and Jackson were able to change the system. So I have hope that your message is, in fact, getting through. So I just wanted to mention that, and it is evident by the NEED Act, which you're about to address.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Please do.
Okay. It's abbreviated the NEED Act, capital N-E-E-D, which stands for National Employment Emergency Defense Act. And Congressman Kucinich just introduced it on September 21st. And here's what it does. It does, and by the way, you can read it at our website, monetary.org. It's right there. You can read it all. And what it does is, first, it dismantles the Federal Reserve System. Dismantles it. A few parts of the Federal Reserve are kept that give some of the statistics we like to have, but the power to control the amount of money and where it goes, that is ended. The Federal Reserve is dismantled. That's the first thing it does. Any money that gets created is created, that the Federal Reserve has created in the past, is created through government. Now, most of the money in the system is put into circulation by the banks when they make loans. And that is described in real detail in a brochure from our website. The thing that, the part that says how to explain to friends and neighbors how our money system works. You go there, and on page 10 of that little brochure, all the stuff is free there. How the various banks create loans, which are used as money, is described there in detail. Now, you don't really have to fully understand that stuff. You just have to know that our money creation power has been taken over by this gang, this private gang, and they use it for themselves, and they don't care about the results. Look what they did with the real estate crisis. Mm. Now, the history of banking, you talk about Daniel Webster, this is not new. This goes all the way back to the very beginning of our country, where the bankers got their way. They created problems, always. And it's time now, during this crisis, we have an opportunity to fix the system. And we should use that opportunity. Now, what was the question?
Oh, the NEED Act. The first one was the dismantling of the Federal Reserve.
Okay.
That's the first thing it does.
It does three big things.
But then the creation of money for infrastructure.
Well, that's the third.
Okay, let me get to that.
Oh, that's okay.
The second thing,
what is called fractional reserve banking, is ended decisively once and for all. That is crucial. Without that, you get no reform. The power, and it's an accounting trick that does this. It's accounting rules that allow the banks to extend their credit, and that credit becomes used as money. In effect, they are allowed to make more loans of their credit than they actually have money.
Right.
They leverage what they have, and unfortunately, the country, the nation, is held accountable when they screw up.
So that is no good.
So that is totally ended, and instead of using credit for money under the Act, we use money for money.
Right.
And that's a big deal. Now, most economists don't know the difference. They actually think that money has to be debt or credit. And that's how they were brought up. And in fact, in our system, it is misstructured in that way, so that most money is bank debt. And that has to change. That's what gives the banking system the power to decide how much money goes out. Not only that, they get interest on it, and that's bad enough. There's something even worse, and that is they decide what gets funded.
Mm.
Will it fund building levees around New Orleans? That everybody knew they needed more levees? Everybody knew and saw on the Nova television show that 150,000 people would be drowned with the wrong kind of hurricane. And what happened? Money for the engineers was cut back. Actually cut back.
Stephen,
will it fund repair of bridges like the bridge that collapsed in Minneapolis? I've driven over that bridge. Or does it get wasted into real estate nonsense speculation and Wall Street games, which produce nothing?
Okay.
And that's a point of them creating nothing by their investment. And that's why your book, which traces this history, because even that's what Hamilton did. They didn't even get subscribed, and they loaned more money than they dreamed of having.
Yeah.
And the same thing has happened again and again. It happened under Jackson and the bid.
Over and over again.
And it's happened again only, and I'm afraid it's going to happen again, unless the changes you're talking about are made relatively soon.
Yeah. Now, if you want to really understand Hamilton, there's a key there from Van Buren. Van Buren's book, The Origin of Political Parties in the U.S., really deals with Hamilton and what his bad ideas lead to, really in a beautiful way. So I would highly recommend that book, especially since Van Buren is, you know, a local guy there. And again, it's called The Origin of Political Parties in the United States. You see, what happened back then, Van Buren went to visit, and he stayed with Tom Jefferson in Jefferson's later years. And Jefferson gave him information about what happened at the time of, you know, the signing, at the time of the Constitutional Convention. Not the convention, but at that time, he gave him information, and he asked Van Buren to pass it on after he died. And that is in that book, The Origin of Political Parties in the United States. Absolutely a classic work that should be read by everybody up there.
When you're home, you're going to have to address the friends of Lyndon Wald.
But do get it. Now, the third part that the Act does, and this is crucial, it instructs the Congress. The Congress has to make these decisions. You cannot take the power away from the Congress. We're giving the power back to the Congress. This is in the Constitution that Congress controls the money. It's in Article 1, Section 8. But in 1913, they gave that power, they delegated that power to the Federal Reserve, and that was a mistake. And that has to be put back. Our Bill 2990 puts that power back into the Congress. And they are encouraged. They can't be instructed, but they're encouraged to create new money and spend it on infrastructure, starting with the $2.2 trillion that the American engineers, the American Society of Civil Engineers, their studies tell us that you need $2.2 trillion over the next 5 years for improving our infrastructure, our existing infrastructure. Now, that's not a big problem to do. The banking system before the crash was creating about $800 billion a year. It's not a problem to create $2.2 trillion over 5 years, but it has to be done. And so Part 3 of the 2990 is that the Congress shall spend money on fixing our infrastructure, and we include into that infrastructure, we include the human infrastructure of education and health care.
There would be an argument that the putting that money into society would cause inflation. I know that it would not because we can absorb it, but I think maybe you could address that a little bit, if you would.
That would be the normal knee-jerk reaction that everybody's been taught to
expect.
That's right. Whenever you talk about the Congress fulfilling its duty to provide the money supply, that's what the economists bring up. Oh, that'll be inflationary. Well, the reason it's not going to be inflationary is that real stuff gets created. What's inflationary is when money gets created without creating goods and services. That would be inflationary. But the infrastructure is there. It gets created by this creation of money, and that and any goods and services, and that holds the inflation down. Now, a careful study of this was done of our act by a scholar. There's a kind of economist that is coming up now, that is starting up, and these are people that are using engineering systems of applying the kind of computer programs that are used to predict weather, for example, and they're using them to predict economic outcomes. Mm. And one was done of our act, and it's on our website. It's the Yamaguchi study. It's Japanese. You don't get much out of Anglo-American economists. It had to be a Japanese guy that figured this out. And go to our website, and you'll see his study there. And he determined, he got his doctorate from Berkeley, then he's a professor in Japan at a big university there. He determined that our act in 2990 would pay off the national debt as it comes due. That's one of the features. It creates the funding necessary to fix the infrastructure, and that solves the unemployment problem, because these people, you know, this takes people working. And it does it without inflation, which is a big deal.
I think that's an important point to make.
Oh, yes.
Own mind, I'm thinking, after just learning that the Fed did either $7 or $16 billion, dollars, which would have been inflationary. And
Trillion.
Yeah, I keep saying that. I'm sorry, it's trillion. I know. It's awful. But $1 trillion. And that did not have a big inflationary effect. So this
interesting, isn't
money,
it?
It's fascinating.
But
it's fascinating.
May I just interrupt? Yeah. Because I sure. want, this is Christine again. I want to explain to folks in the audience again the difference between creating monetary wealth versus real wealth, something that's tangible. And I wanted to make that really clear, because...
Yeah, Christine.
Right. Okay, go for it.
Well, creating money is different from creating wealth. See, Aristotle's definition gave us the answer 2,000 years ago. Under his concept, there's a difference between money and wealth. And wealth is always something tangible. Money is something that can purchase wealth. But in itself, it's not wealth. Mm. It's an abstract thing, an abstract legal power. And it's always a question of the law. What is money? Even when gold coins were money, it was because of the law. The law made them money.
Right.
Now, this is a concept that is difficult sometimes to accept, because, a coin is it's a tangible thing there.
But it doesn't, it's just what's inherently in the copper or the gold. I mean,
That's
it doesn't really produce food or build a building.
No.
So my next question then, is if that's the case, then why can't we push for a debt moratorium on the tremendous amount of debt that we're paying now for money that was created by the Federal Reserve?
Well, you know, that's a really good point. And what we have in our act, we do cover that. And again, if people will look at page 10 of that brochure, you can see there it has a picture of what is out there, which is really money, and what is out there, which is really debt. We convert all of the debt that's out there into money in our act. It all becomes money. It's no longer just debt. And in the doing of that, all the money that the banks have created in the form of debt become money. But then as it gets paid back to them, they pay it over to the Treasury. This is the unique part of the act. You have to read it to see what I'm talking about. But I don't even know if we should go into that much detail on the telephone, you know.
I mean, just one of the reasons why I asked that is because right now, in Europe, in this country, we're being asked, particularly in Europe, to accept these austerity budgets in order to, quote-unquote, save the economy. And that is actually driving down real wealth for the 99%. Concentrating, artificially concentrating wealth into the hands of the 1%.
It shows you how bad the economics profession is for this to even be considered.
And yet the 99% are the people who actually create real wealth.
Yes.
So when these...
You're right. You're right. And that austerity would wreck even further the economic situation. And anyone who's had any experience knows that. But economists who allow that to even be discussed, it's a demonstration of how bad that profession has become.
Kieran Riley is joining us in the studio right now.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Zerlinger. Thank you so much for joining us here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm really excited to learn more about the American Monetary Institute and hopefully maybe get
What's
to read
you. What's your first name?
I'm Kieran.
Kieran.
Yes.
Okay, hi.
Hi, good morning. So I've been listening just really, it's amazing because I was actually reading a bunch of information last night about this and reading about the Treasury Department, the whole thing, and I was actually reading about people who have decided to become sovereign citizens, U.S. sovereigns, securing the title to their name and all that. I don't know if you want to get into that, but there are certain...
No, that'll lead nowhere.
Okay.
Maybe in the next show, but...
Well, it's interesting the FBI is now engaging in heavy surveillance of these groups because they're considered a threat. I don't know why they would be considered a threat, but anyhow, so there's other movements sort of out of the box. I know this is sort of like using the master's tools to take apart the house, but given that the tools do not work, that is going through Congress, which a lot of us
What
believe,
do you mean do not work?
Well, I'm just saying if there's a chance that it might not work, that going through the halls of Congress to solve this, are there any other sort of grassroots suggestions you might have on the level of the people, such as, you know, maybe the Occupy movement? Do they offer you any
hope? The Occupy is a good thing, and I've gone down to our Chicago Occupy and given talks there, and I've done that at the New York Occupy and at the, well, not the Cleveland, but at the Albany Occupy. These are people who are demanding that the corruption stop. They are there objecting to the financial rape of our nation by the banks and the financiers. And that's a good thing. But their activities finally must be expressed through congressional action. And until they understand that and get into that mode, what they do is going to be forgotten. There's absolutely no way that violence at that level is going to be any good.
Right.
If that thing degenerates into violence, and there are groups out there trying to do that, what you'll get is the kind of reaction that you had after the Chicago Democratic Convention of 68. That essentially gave you Ronald Reagan.
Right. I guess what I'm asking is just to reframe the question. I guess what I'm asking is, do you feel optimistic about the NEED Act, for example, and do you feel optimistic about other acts like this going through Congress, given the nature of our Congress today?
Not if everyone's scared to death and afraid to insist on their rights and put our system into action. We've got a system. What concerns me, Kiernan, is the attitude that nothing can work.
Right.
Now, that is the attitude promoted by the, you heard of The Art of War by Sun Tzu, the Chinese philosopher.
Right. Yes.
And he tells you how to defeat, what the best way to defeat an enemy is, or an opponent, and that is to convince the opponent not to fight. And that's what you're talking about with these alternatives. You have to fight this thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
and in fact, how do you convince the opponent not to fight? By convincing them they can't win.
It's just that even Dennis Kucinich is one of the few people who are speaking the truth in Congress, and yet he has been so marginalized. And I guess, you know, to pretend that we're still living. We are living in a sort of a democracy, a representational democracy. I think the thing about the Occupy movement is that it's talking about a democracy where, you know, it's more of each person participating or being a direct democracy. So it can't totally be poo-pooed that in fact government hasn't been bought off. And I'm not just saying this as another, you know, just something to throw out and say, oh, government's been bought off, everybody says that. I mean, in fact, there have been studies done of all kinds of kickbacks and pork spending and, you know, senators and congresspeople in their particular
area. Lobbyists.
And lobbyists. So how do we address that? How do we make this, I mean, the idea of going up against international monetary...
You don't have to do that.
Okay.
It's simple.
We can vote the Federal Reserve out of existence?
2990 does that.
Okay.
That's right.
Who's going to vote on
that? All you need is to have some guts to move it forward and to go in and tell your congressman, go in there and sit there with him, show him the bill, say, look, we need this. Mm-hmm. Do it.
So you need to
convince the 435 congressmen and the 100 senators to go forward on this. And Bernie Sanders is sort of one of them, but he's made a huge mistake here now that you should know about. And if any of you can contact him, you should tell him. And I warned about this in my book in Chapter 24, that it would be a mistake to ask economists how to reform the system.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what Bernie has done. He's formed a committee there around him of economists, and they don't have the ability to tell him what to do. They don't understand. They were brought up in wrong ideas, and they're just going to repeat them. So what you have to do, take this into the hands of the people. The occupied people are doing that slowly, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me
they're learning about this, and they're understanding that they have to get involved in politics. Now, politics is, you know, it's become a kind of a dirty word, but it's not. Politics expresses the will of the people. They have to exercise that. They have to stop watching television and get into activism and really doing things.
There you go.
But anything that is pushing you into individual action as opposed to group organized action is a mistake.
Let me sound a
positive. Always has been.
Let me sound a positive note. Between...
Yeah.
Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders on the right and the left, and thinking back to the history that you lay out in your book,
yeah,
this is a constant battle. Even though, and when Jackson got elected, as he points out, he had 75 votes in the Senate, and then they bought him, including Daniel Webster. But
yeah,
in spite of that, Martin Van Buren and he were in fact able to effectuate change.
That's right.
Just as Jefferson eventually did with Hamilton, and just as Roosevelt did at the time of that bubble. Now,
they had to fight.
Politics is one vote at a time, I've always said. And I think there is hope with education. And I think your Monetary Institute is a leader. And it's having effect because... Although Kucinich is not a powerful leader, his ideas certainly are, and they are catching on.
Yeah,
and when you
right.
have the two extremes, when you have both Sanders and, because Paul is wrong too, he wants to go to the gold standard, and that's never worked. In fact, it never existed, if I read your book correctly. I mean, they
You're
said
right.
it was packed by gold, but it wasn't. There wasn't enough gold.
It was always a farce.
That's right. It's always a farce. It's always been a fiat. The question is, who's going to do it? The government. So let me just mention one thing, and that is you addressed the creation of money versus wealth. And I
yes.
just want to say that the wealth is, in fact, the levees in New Orleans or the bridge in Missouri or even the sewer treatment plant in Valencia, which needs fixing, and in Kinderhook, and that would immediately create jobs.
Yep.
So 2990 or the NEED Act really is the answer, and I think that's what we should be focusing on,
sure.
those of us that belong to various organizations.
Yeah, yeah. And so. That stuff works, Doug. For example, the sewage treatment plant in Kinderhook.
That's
right. And the water system was built by Roosevelt.
That's right. Well, in Kinderhook. Kinderhook does have a sewage system. The water system was. And the federal money that built the Valencia was back when they had revenue sharing.
Uh-huh.
So there are things to be done, but the direct way of doing it is for the government to do what people think is being done, is to create the money to do it and buy the Valencia sewage treatment plant and fix Kinderhook's sewage problem.
But I just want to go on and
there's
say...
There's enough unemployed in that area, I know.
But
to build all this stuff.
One of the things you said, you say in your in this talk in this paper, I'm just going to quote, is this or paraphrase, is this that this cannot be that the situation we're in right now is an existential threat, and that we can't we can't just patch it or regulate it. That in fact it has to fundamentally change. But then in the next paragraph, you were also saying, however, that there's been a slow-moving coup d'etat that has reached the U.S. Supreme Court and has installed a president who twice could not be elected. Let me guess who that might be. So
George Bush.
Yeah. So the point being is again,
the younger.
Right. I just want to be really clear with people. What is it going to take? If you're saying that presidents are being installed in the United States, what is it going to take? You know, to change the banking system to take over the economy. Because when you talk about an existential threat, if just so that people understand, it's the loss of jobs, the destruction of families, but we're also talking about the destruction of the planet right now through unfettered capitalism. And so we're talking about actually the destruction of life maybe on this planet. So with that...
It could get that serious.
That serious. If it isn't that serious already, again, what are you saying that we need to do to address this?
Take steps. And start with the steps that are in front of us. And it took several years for Kucinich to put that act together and to introduce it. He's been working on it since 2004 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And it got introduced in September of last year. Now... It's right there for you. It's right there for all you people. You just have to take steps. Now, Doug McGivney, I think, has the right idea locally of how to do that, and he's forming an education group and maybe an action group. I'm not sure what he, but he wants to form a chapter of the AMI locally there, and we'll do what we can to help in the education side of that, so that people will know what they're doing, and they'll know it's the right thing to do. And when they have that information, they can act, and they have power.
Okay.
And we still have that, despite all the problems in our system, and we know there are many, despite all that, there always have been, all the way back to the beginning. People think, oh, it just went downhill. Not necessarily. We always had a lot of these problems, but the action of people solved those problems. You got a local example there who became president of America, Martin Van Buren.
That's right.
He became the president. Read that book. You'll understand. Act, act, act. You have to do what you can do, and there are a lot of things we can do. Now, if you expect this to be handed to you, what's been handed to you is $29.90. Take it forward.
Okay.
And I think that is the answer. And it's such things as pickets in front of the Bank of America, who received, I think it's just short of $1 trillion.
Mm.
$1 trillion. And let me tell you the effects of that. They financed Pfizer, which bought off Wyeth, that closed 18,000 jobs in this country that are now in China and India. That's what the Federal Reserve did with Bank of America.
Yeah.
And that's what's got to stop. We need to build our own infrastructure, put our own people to work, and we can do that with 2990, or I call it the NEED Act.
Yeah.
Because it is a need. It's a desperate need for this country.
Just a quick question. Is in the couple of minutes that we have left, there is also a movement about creating a cooperative banks or people's banks. What do you think of that?
Well, here's the thing, Christina. Mm-hmm. We're given an opportunity here with this crisis. A lot of people want to hear what we're doing because of the crisis.
Right.
And before that happened, it was much harder to reach them. At the time of the crisis, you have to do what's real.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do what's real. And anything that does not get at the heart of the problem, I consider a distraction right now.
Yeah, now
all the stuff that you see about states going into banking, we're not trying to get the government into banking. What we have to do is get the banks out of government.
Okay, we're going to have to let you go. Not for long. I'll be back in touch with you before the end of the day, frankly.
Great.
Because we got to set this up again.
Wonderful. I'm available any time, and I'll try to be less excited the next time.
No, you're
no,
doing fine.
No, it's great. This is great.
We certainly thank you, Stephen Zerlinga, and I recommend, actually, your website. If they don't want to read the whole book, The Law, Science, and Money, which I found fascinating, but I noticed that you have a great summary. When you address the Treasury Department, you seem to summarize everything pretty well. So I recommend people go to your website. Just search American Monetary Institute. It comes right up.
It's easy. It's monetary.org.
Monetary.org.
It's a 501c3 organization since 96 there in Kinderhook.
Okay.
It's local stuff, folks. It's local stuff.
I don't know how to thank you. I will be in touch.
I want to thank you for this opportunity.
And you're welcome.
I also want to thank you. I want folks to...
thank you, Christina.
You're very welcome, and thank you for coming on WGXC.
Anytime.
Okay, WGXC Community Radio. You're listening to 90.7 FM ACRA, and this can only be done through community radio, and
Great. Please
tune in next week for another edition of Tell It Like It Is on Thursday from 10 to 11. Thank you so much,
You're
Doug.
You're more important than WGY, that's for sure.
Okay, in your opinion. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.